Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Artist Spotlight, a monthly podcast focusing on some of the amazing creative talent behind Forbidden Panel. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
All right, welcome to this edition of the Artist Spotlight in a very unfamiliar role. I am Richard Duran of Crooked Smile Art, interviewing AJ. Say hello, AJ.
Hello, AJ.
I meant say hello to the people, AJ.
Hello to the people, AJ.
Exactly. So, how is it being on the other side of the microphone?
Annoying, because I already can tell a couple things I want to edit out.
You know what? I'm not getting paid for this, so just roll with it.
And neither am I.
That you're the head man in charge, though. You're never supposed to get paid.
Someone should have told me that 10 years ago.
It's passion. It's a love. That's why we do this.
Again, 10 years ago.
So, we're going to get into the fact that I've known you forever, for one. So, what if I've known you 30-some-odd years?
Something like that.
More than I'd care to admit.
I know, I was only 3 when I saw Star Wars.
Right, yeah. That's just your horrible math.
Right. Eisenhower graduation.
So, being the main and focal and creator of Forbidden Panel, what actually started the passion, the business to get you driving in the first place?
Well, you know, I was sitting there and I knew I had all these stories and stuff going on in my head, all these ideas that I had gone, that had been running through me. And it got to a point in reading comic books where I was just getting tired of the same old monotonous stuff, the same old villains, same old fights, everything. And I decided that I wanted to start writing comic books instead of the normal short stories that I was writing. Just to give somebody, anybody, just an option. Something different for them to read, something different for them to experience. So I sat down with a buddy of mine and we started working together on a book, and next thing I knew I was like, well, I'd rather publish this myself and try and fish it around, because I want it to come out instead of being put on a shelf somewhere or developmental hell or just getting told no so many times. You know, so instead of being told no, I wanted to tell myself no. So instead, that's how Forbidden Panel came about. You know, so yeah.
So you got sick of the monotony of the hero and the superhero and supervillain, and wanted to create something completely different. You've pretty much always been writing, right throughout high school and.
Oh yeah, I was first published when I was published in Reader's Digest when I was in junior high, and then writing throughout junior high and high school and stuff. It's just something I did to pass the time, or when wrestling wasn't on, or when cartoons weren't on. When I got in trouble and had my toys taken away, you know, I just sit there and write adventures that I should have with my toys.
Life before video games and the internet.
Right, exactly. I mean, I even had, you know, I grew up on the Super Nintendo and I grew up on Pong and all that stuff. So whenever that stuff got taken away, I would think of adventures that I would want my toys to have. And so I would write stories based on that. And it just grew from there.
So growing up, what were your favorite genres?
Horror and science fiction. When we first got our first VCR.
Wow.
For those of you that don't know what a VCR is, Google it. See, films used to come out in these tapes, these little square heavy things.
Not little.
Right. When we got our first VCR, the first movie that we rented, I mean, we got it and we ran down to the video store, and the first movie we rented was The Last Starfighter.
Oh, I love that movie.
And which I recently rewatched because of the book I'm currently reading, but we're just finished. And I mean, I had been, you know, my father and I grew up on Star Wars and Star Trek and the whole nine. We'd go down there to the theaters and watch that stuff, but to actually have the movie in my home that I could watch as many times as I want to without having to pay, you know, theater fees and stuff like that, and without having to sneak into a theater and risk jail time, was fantastic. And so, you know, sci-fi stuck with me. And then Stephen King, you know, I'd read Stephen King growing up my whole life, and so, you know, those were the two genres that stuck with me. So.
And, like, currently, do you see a difference between the storytelling of then and now, and what would you prefer?
You mean like writing for the toys and stuff I was playing with?
Correct.
As opposed
to still writing for the new toys that you're playing with.
Right. Well, the new toys I'm playing with get submitted to Penthouse.
Not those ones.
Yeah.
It's family friendly.
Right. Sorry, Playgirl. The difference is that I don't write as much now anymore. and then I'm very hyper.
Was that a shot to artists?
No. It's got nothing to do with any of that, as far as you know. No, before I used to write for fun, and they were just, you know, stories and adventures in my head that I wish I could take. However, as life progressed and reality sunk in and the harshness and depressive nature of life sunk in, I find that the stories I write now, while they still may be horror or sci-fi genre related, are based on tragedies that either I've experienced myself or have been around to see, or just because of what has happened in growing up, I have a negative outlook on things. You know, I'm able to see a story from all different sides, I'm able to see something that's going to happen from all different sides and 10 moves ahead of me. So, but it's always that 10th move is I'm dead, or someone I care for is gone, or I lose everything. And so now my stories now kind of reflect that, whereas before, you know, the Wampa won instead of Luke Skywalker and threw Wolverine down at Castle Grayskull, you know.
So it's no longer through innocent eyes as much as it's reality. Do you feel it adds a real feel to the stories, like people can grasp it?
Occasionally, I think it does, yeah. I think that sometimes it's it might be a little too far-fetched for some people to understand, because, I mean, out there, even with the current age of super technology that we're in, there's still a lot of innocent eyes out there. There's still a lot of very ignorant people. I mean, the last Artist Spotlight I did with Daniel, there's a lot of things in talking to him that he doesn't know, and it's not any fault of his own. It's just he didn't have the same experience as I did. So when you try to relate these stories to people like that, they think that that's impossible. There's no way that could happen. It's just not real.
You know, it's really hilarious about that. If you think about your last Artist Spotlight, part of that is The Crow and how when Obar wrote it, he was dealing with his own traumas and how he put it out and how people could relate to it. It's kind of similar.
Right, exactly. And that's just how I am now. It's how I look, my life outlook. I'm not saying it's all grim and gloomy and whatnot and depressing. It is. but that's just how I write.
Sometimes there's really good lunches.
Right. But I also write to end the story now. Whereas before, these were just the continuing adventures of, you know, of the Wampa and Wolverine and Castle Grayskull and Snake Eyes. But now, because growing up having read all these comic books and X-Men, Spider-Man, all that stuff, and they're still going on, and they're still fighting Doc Ock and the Scorpion and Magneto, my stories that I write have a definitive ending. Like, I don't want to write an ongoing series, the same thing for the next 20 years of my life. I just want this short story and boom, move on, because I feel that maybe that part of my life can be ending and then I can boom, move on, you know.
So who were your biggest influence, like writers that you like grew up with or even today that you like take a lot from, like personally, like, you know, the ones that grasp you emotionally?
Stephen King, like I said, I grew up on him. I learned not to be uber descriptive. However, I still am somewhat over descriptive. Robert Kirkman is, and he came out of nowhere, you know, but, and it's not just his writing, it's his, the way he's come up, the way he's done it, you know, Kevin Smith, his stories, his movies may be garbage, but, you know, how he came up, how he moved up, I still am attracted to what he puts out, because to me they're just, you know, he was a fat guy too, hey, you know, look what he had, he sold his comic books, you know. Who else? Joe Hill is a recent add-on. When it comes to comic books, there's not a lot of writers out there that impress me. It's very hard to However, one of my favorite comic books of all time is Powers, and that's because Bendis is an amazing writer in that aspect. I've always said that when he's not writing corporate and he's writing personal, his writing is phenomenal. And so Powers is one of those prime examples. I was recently introduced to Ernest Cline. His writing is amazing. It makes me want to write like that. I think that's pretty much all the ones.
It seems like a lot of them that you're a lot into their journey as authors and how they become who they are. So it's something you can relate to?
Yeah, their backstories are what really impresses me, how they've, you know, moved up and come up in the world and stuff. I mean, again, Robert Kirkman, he's come out of nowhere. You know, if you would have said Robert Kirkman 5 years ago, they would have been like, who? You know, didn't he do Battle Pope? You know?
I like Battle Pope.
And now look at him, man. He's franchised. You know? He's Ryan Pillman. He's the Sting. You know, he's franchised all over the place. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just impressive how he's come up from that. And so, yes, I look at myself and look at the past atrocities that I've had to deal with in my life, and then I look at myself now, and, you know, I'm proud of where I am now, where my life is now, and I want to reflect that in my writing and in my storytelling.
So you're the main focus for the longest has been ZKS, which I know you hold a love and pride for, but
occasionally.
Do you feel sometimes like you ended up pigeonholing yourself?
Absolutely. I feel like I pigeonholed myself and the company into that genre, into the horror zombie genre. And especially since I hate zombies. I'm so sick of zombies now. Really, I do. But at the same time, I can't ignore my past either. I mean, growing up with Romero, big influence on the zombie genre and world, and then, you know, even going forward now with some of the movies and TV shows that are out now, I can't ignore the zombie genre, how huge it's become. And that was majorly proofed out by all the zombie beauty pageants that we'd put on, the amount of attention and love that we'd gotten from it. However, I'm very excited to not write about zombies anymore, and I'm looking forward to that.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with AJ as soon as he puts his pants back on.
Hey guys, this is Dan.
And this is Jen.
We're your hosts on The Road Ahead.
Add us on Facebook and find out about some of the interesting, odd, and amazing places you can visit on your next road trip.
Just go to www.facebook.com/The Road Ahead Series. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Road Ahead Series or simply follow us at Road Ahead Series.
Thanks, and we'll see you on The Road Ahead. Now back to the panel cast.
And we are back at the with the Artist Spotlight with AJ.
I don't know if it counts. I'm not really an artist.
Well, it's an Artist Spotlight.
Right.
Writing's an art. It's an art form.
Not in the comic book world.
You're an inker?
Occasionally. But my inking's horrible.
It's improved. Actually, you're better than I am, so.
Yeah, well.
It's not really saying a lot, but.
Still can't draw for shit, so. I'm a good tracer.
So, when last we left, the world was a major dilemma.
A very pessimistic place.
Exactly. So, back to the roots of Forbidden Panel. You started off originally with a different partner, right?
Yeah, Brian Kane. And he wasn't really so much a partner as he was just a collaborator with some of the ideas and works that I had going on in my brain. He eventually left the company because he just wasn't feeling it, you know. So we parted. It was a mutual parting, I guess. Still on good terms and whatnot. But. And then I took the company from there and ran it by myself.
So at what point did you run into Justin and start basically, I guess, maybe the rebirth or rebranding of Forbidden Panel?
I want to say it was about a year or so afterwards. At this point, it was basically Brian, Brandy, and myself. And we were just doing news updates on the website and stuff. I always had the idea that even if we did put out books and whatnot, how are people going to know where to find them and where to buy them? Even if we had a website and stuff, people aren't just going to randomly show up there. So I wanted to do fall back on my writing side by doing news and interviews and whatnot with creative people. People a lot bigger than I'll ever be, size-wise. And by that I mean stature.
That was a short joke.
Yes.
Thanks for the short guy with you.
Right. That's the one thing I noticed. We're all the same height.
I know. Every time we got to put up a banner, we're all the same height.
We're looking at Daniel or Anthony or James to put up the banner. Anyway, so Brandy and I had went to the Shrine Show up in L.A., the Shrine Auditorium, and I came across Justin. I saw his artwork, and I liked it, and I pitched him like I do a lot of artists out there. And at the time, he said, you know, okay, that sounds good. I'm interested. And then I found out he didn't have a website, and I thought it was ridiculous that somebody of that caliber of art not having a website or selling something online. So I made him a deal. I said, I'll build you a website. You draw this book. So he said, okay. And that's how I suckered him in.
And he's been trapped in the basement ever since.
Ever since. You can tell by the growth of his hair and his chops.
So together you guys have been running FP amongst suckering the rest of us in for how long now?
Let's see. I started making the Kool-Aid about 8 years ago. Yeah, I'd say it's been about 8 years.
And you guys together you've written and he's drawn all of the ZKS titles, correct?
Right, except for the two sketchbooks that we had out, and those were art submitted by our fans and other artists. So together, minus those two, there's been 5 books.
That's a lot of zombies. Well, but you've built a fan base, which I've personally seen sitting behind the booth, people that have brought their friends and family members and talk about how they have read your books and how it impacted them and they wanted to share it with these other people. How does that make you feel?
Fucking creepy.
Wasn't that my line?
It is absolutely horrifying and terrifying. First off, I am not a social butterfly. I am have high massive anxiety problems and social anxiety problems. So it was bad enough to be in a public forum, but then to have people come up and tell me that they've read the book or they have my poster hanging up or they have this, and it's humbling and scary at the same time, and it made me have to rethink what I was putting on paper and the audience I was appealing to. Because in the zero issue, there's a nude scene and there's cursing, and I've got a 10-year-old boy reciting the words to me verbatim. And I had to think, I didn't even let my son read this book until he was 17. So maybe I need to take a step back in how I'm doing things and what I'm putting out for, because obviously the zombie genre is for all ages. And that was something I didn't consider when I first started the book. So, yeah, it was very scary and very humbling.
So do you feel your writing and your thought process has changed due to your audience or due to your age? Like, do you feel you're more mature now, or do you just see the difference in the audience?
I think it's a combination of both. I think the stories have always been there. As you know, my head is full of all these random stories and thoughts and bullshit, mostly bullshit. But because of the audience, I've had to choose different stories to write and focus on, different ideas to go at, instead of the original stories I was writing. Because, I mean, when we first started this whole deal, it was 10 years ago, and there wasn't a lot of blood, gore, or cursing or anything out in books. You know, you didn't see Spider-Man punching a hole through somebody's head or something like that. And I wanted that. I wanted to be that, because I always felt like those books were restrained. You know, like these characters could do so much more, but they were restrained due to monotony or, you know, the creators or even the publishing company that they were writing under or being created under. So I didn't want that. I wanted no restrictions going into our work. And then I realized that was kind of, I wouldn't say a mistake, but there needs to be an even balance between the two. you know, I need to be able to appeal my head to my head and appeal to the audience as well. So, you know, I had to write different styles of stories because of it.
Well, I've seen it firsthand where we have like 10-year-old, 12-year-old kids that talk about they, you know, their room is decorated with ZKS stuff, and I see a very, it's almost awe-striking to you, and it's actually something that's amazing to see on your face because you are very antisocial, but you do tend to open up when they bring their kids around. Do you realize that?
Yeah, I do. Probably because of my experience with my own son. You know, just not having him around for all that time, and but the father instinct doesn't go away. So seeing the kids come up and talk to me and stuff like that, it excites me and it makes me like, ooh, awesome, you know. And at that point, that's when we immediately start losing money. So if you ever want to get a pile of free stuff from us, have your kid come up and tell me that he loves me, and I'll just throw everything at him for free.
I do not endorse that as CFO.
But yeah, I can imagine. Because like the first time it happened, that first kid that walked up to me and said that to me, I didn't know what to say at that point. I was just like, your mom let you look at the tits and ass in the book. You know, I just didn't know what to say. And then after that, I just kind of get high off of it, you know? It's kind of nice and endearing.
So, also, other things that you've put on that you alluded to before was the zombie beauty pageant, which, how was that experience? How did the idea come about from the beginning?
Well, we were sitting there, we had just put on the first comic book expo, and we were all sitting around trying to think of ideas of something else we could throw. At the time, I was working at a location that was an event venue and allowed us to, you know, have free reign over it because they wanted to try and think of ways to bring in money for themselves. So, you know, we're sitting around brainstorming, and one of our former members, Martin, was talking about how he had seen a zombie beauty pageant once. And the idea intrigued me, so I researched the hell out of it, saw all the different types of zombie beauty pageants that were out there, and thought they were ridiculous. And so the way, you know, the way I do things is I try to improve things, or I try to add on to it, or I see better ways to do things. So I decided to reconstruct everybody else's zombie beauty pageant and make this our own by adding, you know, competition, the categories, the different swimsuit, stuff like that. And I wanted to make it appealable to all ages, to everybody. I mean, I wanted old people, young people, you know, middle-aged people to come and down, not just because it was a zombie thing, but because it was one thing they'd never seen before in their life. So I made it Miss America with zombies.
So it went on for, to this date, there was three, correct?
Right, 3 years.
Okay, so from the first to the third, what do you feel as a creator noticing the growth? Because I was involved with two, and just in two, seeing how big it got from one to the next was awe-striking. But not just the size of it, but the word of mouth and the enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one we had was word of mouth. We had put out there that we were looking for contestants for a zombie beauty pageant, put it on Facebook and all that stuff. And so we had a meeting with the contestants, those that wanted to compete, and this amazingly drop-dead gorgeous girl walked in, and we were doing it at a coffee shop at the time, and she walks in, and me being smooth as I am, was like, excuse me, I think you grabbed my coffee. And at which point she apologized, and she asked me, you know, because I was wearing a ZKS shirt at the time, if I knew where the zombie beauty pageant contestants were meeting. And I looked at her like, why? Are you here to mock us? And she's like, because I want to compete. And, you know, up to then, my idea was a bunch of whole geek girls like us would be rolling in, you know. And here's this girl, I mean, she, absolutely stunning, wanted to do this pageant, and I didn't understand why. And so she walks in, and the rest of the girls were people we had known, or, you know, people I had wrangled in or guilted into doing it, as I often do. And, yeah, we just went from there. We started doing, But I thought, like, if this girl, the most normal girl I've ever seen in my life, wants to do this, then obviously there's something to this. You know? So we put on the first show, and it was 135 people we had in the audience. And to me, I was like, who are these 130 people? Because I know five. And, you know, it was just friends of the contestants and whatnot I brought in. The second one we put on was a little over 300 people. And we had 10 contestants, and only two of them were from the company. 13 contestants. Only two of them were from the company. Everybody else was people that had heard about it or saw the videos. And so after the first one went on, you know, I was being interviewed throughout the whole thing by newspapers and stuff, which I was didn't know what to do. And
well, because you are the center
of the Alien Empire comic explosion. We'll get to that later. But I'm being interviewed by newspapers and whatnot, and the next day it was all over the place. It was in newspapers, Alien Empire, IE Magazine, Lone's Daily Facts, Sun Newspaper, Press Enterprise, stuff like that we had done this show. And freaked me out because I didn't know. Of course, I got copies and sent it to my mommy because I had to do something. I was like, look, mommy, something you'd finally be proud of me for. I put hot undead bitches on stage. So the next year, you know, we did it, and the crowd doubled in size. The contestants doubled in size, and my inventiveness doubled in size. The ideas and stuff I wanted to do with it grew, and I had somebody that I was talking to, one of the reporters I had talking to, and she said, I was like, you know, I'm surprised you came out here again that you would want to do this. And she's like, look, until I came to the last one, I hated zombies. I never saw a zombie film in my life. I came to last year's show, and it was so awesome. I've watched all these zombie films since then so that I can know the references so I can come back here for this year. And it's now my tradition. I hope you keep putting this on. And apparently, other people I talked to said the same thing. It's when they said, this is my Halloween tradition, that it like blew me for a loop. I didn't understand something that I had created that people would want to see over and over again. Then we did the third one. And then the third one, over 500 people, MTV, huge, excited crowd. And it just blew my mind. Blew my mind. And it was the first time I ever actually got to sit down and watch the show. And I was like, oh, shit, that's what this that's why everybody keeps coming back. Because up until then, you know, I was directing, writing, producing, promoting, and even helping to choreograph the dance numbers and everything. I was doing everything behind the scenes. And, you know, I was running around like chicken with his head cut off, going crazy. So much so at the end of the night I just would sit down in a chair and have many cigarettes before we did anything else. So I actually got to sit there and watch the show, and I finally understood why. Like, it was an awesome show, and everybody put on 100%. I realized at that point it was 50% pageant, 50% stage show, and I couldn't have been more prouder of it. It was phenomenal.
So I understand taking your pride in watching the growth of the show, but do you take pride in the fact that you were able to actually, and I give you a lot of credit for this, knowing you personally, to MC part of it at the beginning? Like, I know for a fact how terrifying that is for you, but you pulled it off great, and, you know, everybody had, you know, you introducing, the first time you introduced ZKS and we came marching out, that had to be a point of pride for you.
I was on a lot of Xanax. So much so to the point, like...
So you've seen the video, then.
Right. Public speaking has never been a good thing for me. It's never been something I'm a fan of. Unfortunately, during the first year, before we put on the show, everybody in the company was like, we can't put on the show without you getting out there. It's your show. You're the CEO. You've got to make an appearance. At which point, I quit and ran away and was forced back by my wife. Damn her. Getting up there, you know, you just put on the mask and do what you gotta do. And so the second one, we did a skit with you guys, and that's still my favorite picture, man. I want to frame it hanging on my wall. It's the picture of me up on stage, Dave in the background, and all of you guys ZKS up right in front of me. Because not only was the event something I had created, but the characters. You guys were dressed up like comic book characters that I had only seen in my mind before that, or on paper. And here you guys were, the living embodiment of my dream. So, yeah, it was very, very proud of that moment. Same with the third year.
The third year, as you know, contrary to what you see on MTV, was a lot bigger than what the hell they showed. It looked like we put it on the garage, but...
Right. The third year was over 500 people. We had a lot of contestants, and none of them were Forbidden Panel. And that was something I was very proud of. Like, you know, the contestants previous years, they were Forbidden Panel, but they were not allowed to win. No member of the company is ever allowed to enter any of the competitions or any raffles or anything we hold. So we had to use them, though, to make it seem like there's more than five girls on stage. In the second one, we did the first Zombie Princess, which I don't know whether to be offended or excited the fact that parents would let their kids dress up like this and be on stage. But I guess it's better than Honey Boo Boo.
Yes.
So, yeah, and contrary to what MTV shows...
And they put on some really good skits.
They did work.
Yeah, there was some really good work out there.
There was inventive people. And so, yeah, the third one, you know, I looked out. In fact, if you watch the DVD, it's the first thing I say. Holy crap, there's a lot of people here.
The DVD, which now is currently available on the website... Only $10. I believe it's a Blu-ray and DVD copy.
Blu-ray and DVD combo.
So just go ahead and go to ForbiddenPanel.com. Go ahead and shop, and it's something you want to purchase.
You're listening to the show right now. You might as well shop while you're on the website. Just saying.
Shameless plug.
Right. So yeah, you know, the third year, it's huge amount of people. So much so that I'd gotten word that the line to get in the door was wrapped all the way down the block. Like down the block and then around the corner and further down. At which point I was like, oh, fuck you, stop fucking with me. You know, that was bullshit. But if you get to see the DVD at all, you'll see. Like I had them run out there and videotape it. There were so many people there I didn't know what to do.
There was the lineup of, I believe, like 3 hours before we opened.
Right. There was a good... You know, there's that everyone calls it the magic hour. I call it the burning in hell hour. There's an hour in Redlands where no matter where you go, the sun is on you. And there was a couple that was there from, I think it was like 3:30, and we started the show at 7. And they were just there sitting in the sun, baking away. And I popped my head out. I was like, you know, can I help you? Because I thought maybe they had an appointment to see the venue or something with the, you know, the manager or whatnot. And they're like, we're here for the show.
Aren't you the manager?
They're like, we're here for the show. And I was like, why? do you need to buy tickets? What happened? They're like, no, we want to be the first ones in. We want to see the show, make sure we get good seats. And I was like, do I know you? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay. I then proceeded to freak out, and that's when I guzzled all my Xanax.
I do remember that. You did have a freak out moment.
Mm-hmm. Lots of Xanax, lots of cigarettes. Don't smoke kids, it's bad for you.
Who would want to smoke kids?
No, cracky.
So, which hopefully one day soon, and I mean by next year, we will put the zombie beauty pageant back in full gear.
Yeah, I mean the problem, it's a blessing and a curse. We had a lot of people in attendance, like I said, over 500 people. Great show, awesome. However, we outgrew the venue. So the problem now is trying to find a venue that'll work with us on pricing or whatnot that'll fit more than 500 people in the door. Because I know at this rate, I'm getting emails and messages back and forth asking me, you know, even the newspaper has hit me up saying, is there another show this year? No. What can we do to help? You know, we want to see this show again. So I know the next time we put on the show, we're going to have well over 500, 600 people. So we have to find a venue that will fit that many people. So that's why, honestly, the show's been put on hold, because we're just having a problem finding a venue.
But we will.
Eventually, I hope. you know, I thought, you know, the first couple years that we didn't put on the show, I was like, oh, thank God I don't have that stress looming over me. Because it's very stressful for me running around doing what I got to do and put everything on. I mean, it's not that... I have a lot of people that I'm very grateful that help out, the entire Forbidden Panel family, even the volunteers and contestants. I mean, they do a great job. They help me out and help alleviate my stress so much more and make the job so much easier. But it is still a major stress point in my life. So for the past 2 years, it was kind of like, ah, cool, I don't have to worry about it. But this is the first time this year, like, I miss putting on the event. I miss having it. that's not so much a financial gain or anything. It's just, you know, I get to be as creative as I can on a comic book, but to see the live action version of it, it's a whole different level, and I miss seeing people smiling. I miss giving people something to do. I miss people telling me it's their tradition, you know, and I miss that. I miss, we made people dress up, and you came in costume or you came in a tux, and people came in costumes and tuxes. I was impressed, and they loved it. And I miss seeing that happiness on everybody's face, the enjoyment they got.
You also changed people's lives, people that came in just as contestants, and now one is a full-fledged geek who's worse than us.
Right, yeah. That's not my fault, though. She inhaled the Kool-Aid. Like, we just drank it. She got a straw and sniffed that shit down. But, yeah.
Well, another thing that you've put on, which I believe you put on two comic book expos, How was that, running that? And I know the stress, and I know what it's like to set up. But what was it like from your end?
Well, the first, we decided that we wanted to put on our own comic book convention. At some point in time, during the 10 years of Forbidden Panel, I had realized that there is an amazing amount of highly skilled, talented artists that are just local to us. And so I started converting the company to try to highlight those people, try to feature them and give them a voice, give them a place to live and a place to show their artwork and show their skills, because I believed in them. So I figured it's unfair that nobody else should know about them. So in doing so, I decided to put on a comic book convention of my own called the Inland Empire Comic Expo. And I did it in such a way where I didn't want a swap meet going on inside the show. I wanted it to be nothing but local creators and local artists to spotlight their work. And so we did the first one. And a couple of swap meet people snuck in. That was my bad. Glenn! but it was great because we had over 300 people show up. It was Super Bowl Sunday. And we still had people show. Granted, 3:30 rolled around. It was a fucking barren wasteland. But up until that point, we held a costume contest. We had a band perform. And I was so concerned about how the local creators and artists were doing that I went up to each booth personally, even though I was the one putting on the event and I had my own booth to worry about. I went up to each booth personally and asked them how business was doing, because I wanted them to be doing good. And if they weren't doing too well, I made our MC, which was Dave Strickland, who also was the host for the Zombie Beauty Pageant. I made him go up on stage and announce, hey, come to this booth, check out this person's artwork, blah, 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 blah. If they had any trailers or commercials or anything that we could spotlight on, we would take that and project it onto our big, what was it, like 60-foot screen that we had at the theater. I did everything to make sure that everybody that participated got to showcase their art and made it worth their while. So it was awesome. And very stressful.
Well, speaking as a consumer for the first one, who actually I didn't know you were putting on. I believe I saw it in the newspaper, and just randomly, I think that's the first time I had seen you in almost 20 years. It was amazing because it was local. There was a lot of great art, and it seemed like it was better ran than some of the other smaller like shrines.
Yeah, there was no porn booth. We had gaming demonstrations upstairs so people could play games. We had a costume contest. A lot of people came dressed in costumes. We had one guy who is a stuntman for major motion pictures and a costume creator, and brought his kid in to participate in the costume contest, and she won. So she got a whole bunch of free comic book stuff. And the artists were all great. They all contributed something to the grand prize for the competition. So not only did they get to win a bunch of geek stuff, but they also got to experience the local artist's talent firsthand. And my understanding is she still has the posters hanging up on her wall and shows them off with pride. I was very proud of that. We had the 501st out there. We had the Inland Empire Ghostbusters. We had the local Star Trek cosplaying group out there. We had Ecto-1 sitting in front of the theater. Great turnout. And then we did the second one, which coincided with Celebration and Coachella, and another convention that was going on that I had no idea. We'd already booked the space months ahead of time. We still had a decent turnout, but not as well as we would have had hoped. And it was at that point. Plus, we had done it like right after the second Zombie Beauty pageant and right before WonderCon. So we were all pretty beaten and ass-kicked.
And I think we, working at the venue, had a big event the week before.
Right, right. The night before.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah. So it was very draining and whatnot. And it was at that point where we were like, okay, well, we need to be smarter with the next one. Find a date that nobody else is putting on an event and run at that time. Unfortunately, after that, a big controversy erupted with some of our cosplaying groups that we had invited over. All these new, smaller shows kept popping up all over the place, and the venue just became unavailable for us also. So we just haven't been able to put it on again. Someday we might put it back on. As the more we network, the more we grow, going all these big shows, the more fans we make, the more friends and artists that we meet, run into, the next show we put on will be a lot better and a lot more fun, so, for everybody.
So with those shows off, putting on your own shows delayed for now, we've been able to, or you have had, the company as a whole, focusing on more of shows like WonderCon. This is our first appearance at Kamikaze, correct?
Unofficially, yes. Justin had a booth last year, so ZKS, the comic book, made an appearance at his booth last year, and I helped run the booth for a couple of days. But this is our first official FP booth itself, so not happy with the booth space. But at the same time,
he's not happy with the booth space.
We are. We're trying to get out there more. We're just trying to expand the brand, I guess you could say.
So, what's it like being a writer on the other side of the booth?
I don't know. I'm bored.
You get no glory.
I get no love.
But you have got cookies.
Oh, I've got cookies and dirty looks. creeped out parents. I could use some cookies right now.
So, coming to, WonderCon or Kamikaze coming up, just coming in and seeing the reality of your booth, your space, your company being there, is it more stressful or more prideful?
It depends. You know, we did, every WonderCon we do, we obviously get respect from WonderCon itself because they put us in amazing positions and locations. The last WonderCon we did, we were in between DC Comics and Dark Horse. Literally in between them. And Skybound was right around the corner. So we get a lot of respect from them. So in that aspect, that's very prideful for me. You know, to sit there and be like, do I want Superman? Do I want Darth Vader? Do I want Hot Zombie Chicks? Which ones do I want? You know, and if you see any of the photos and whatnot, you can see how vastly improved the booth space has gotten. Where our first WonderCon booth was the booth of 1,000 banners, because we really didn't have a lot of product or things to put out, to now it's the booth of where the hell are we going to put this one banner? Because we have so much product and so much art, so much
always
creative
build up.
Right, which is funny again, because we're all under 6 feet tall and can't reach any of that stuff. But yeah, so it's very, very prideful. I'm very proud of almost everything that we've done, with the exception of, everything. I think so. Yeah, I guess.
You should be proud. I mean, you've created a genre to yourself. So moving forward, from what you've been doing and how you've basically pigeonholed yourself, I know you got other stuff coming out, non-zombie related. I'm sure you may not want to throw out full spoilers, but how does it feel to get other stuff out of your head?
it just got replaced with other things, honestly. My brain is a Tetris puzzle going on. I pulled out a long piece and an LP showed up, you know.
So basically you're never not working.
No, not in my head anyway. It's what's been great about doing other things other than zombies, and not to take anything away from Justin, it's been fantastic working with him. Yeah. It's a rare occasion when you don't have to say anything and the artist automatically knows what you're thinking. It's still occasionally a rare occasion with Justin, but no, it's been great working with Justin in that aspect. But I've got two other artists that I'm currently working with. One of them, it's been a dream to always work with Joey Lepartnick. We've been friends almost as long as you and I have been, and now that I've gotten a chance to sit down and work with him, it's almost like I'm working with Justin, because we've been friends so long that, you know, all I have to do is put words on paper, and he's just filling with ideas that I didn't even know I had. So it's been great on that aspect, and it's not zombie related. Actually, the story he's working on is a very, very personal story, and it's going to get a lot of people.
It's really good.
And I'm working with Robert Lampier on another story, and that one's,
I don't like him.
That one's kind of a personal story too, but in a comedic way. And it's been great to work with him. Unfortunately, he just opened up a new store, so a lot of his time is running that store right now. But as soon as he's free and gets that artwork in, you'll see it.
So the amazing thing is that you work with three amazing artists on very, very different ideas. Do you think that their art tells the story, like projects the genre the way you want it to be?
Yes, in some aspects. Joey's art is phenomenal. I couldn't ask for a better random find that I've known him for 20 years. But to see him come available and be able to put my words on paper. Again, not taking anything away from Justin. He made my dream come true. But for the past 8 years, I've only seen him draw my words.
Correct, yeah.
So to have somebody else...
I'm sure he wants to draw other people's words, too.
Right. Literally, he just wants to draw the word draw. But to see someone else take my writing and interpret it with their viewpoint and their skill set has been eye-opening. It makes me want to write more. At the same time, it makes me not want to write again because I'm still waiting for the artist to finish drawing. That's the catch. And again, it's nothing against any of them. It's for me as a writer, I'm not as critical as other people are in their writing, and I don't know if it's because I'm highly skilled at it or whatnot. That I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but for me, I write one draft and I'm good to go. And I've had people look at it and look at those drafts and proofread for me and say, yeah, it looks great, it's good to go. I'm not one that has to go back and re-edit and change or do anything like that. I've never been that kind of guy. When it comes to my writing, I get it on point, or I don't show anybody. So for me, for example, the story that Joey's currently working on, it took me an hour to write, one very long flow of conscious hour, and so now I'm done. And so now I've got to wait weeks before he's finished. So in those weeks, you know, the first couple of weeks, you're like, all right, man, let's work on the next story. Let's kick out the next story. The next couple of weeks, you're like, well, let me put a break on. Let me wait. And then, you know, a couple weeks after that, you're like, fuck that story. I got nothing going on. What else do I let me do something else in the company to keep my mind occupied. And again, it's not their fault. They have lives, too. It's just that I get done so quickly. It's like, what now? I have idle hands, you know. Same with 24-hour comic book day. I 2 hours into that, I'm done with the story, and the rest of the time, I'm sitting there just basically telling Justin what to draw, you know. And, okay, that's cool, but now what? So I wish we had more artists available so that I can get all this crap out of my head and finally relax. So.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Because you're pretty. So damn pretty.
So going forward, what are your aspirations for the company? Like, what would you like? We all have dreams, and we all have big dreams. I mean, we all really want to make a living out of this. But what are your realistic aspirations for maybe in the next 5 years? Where you would like to see the company?
Carne asada fries.
That's probably in a couple days.
Where I'd like to see the company? I'd love to have our own office space. We kind of have one now with the clubhouse in my car and complex, but I'd love to have a space where people can come and go as they please to draw and create and do whatever they work on, whatever projects they're working on. I'd like to have an additional space where, you know, we do our 12 and 24-hour days. where we invite the public in and offer help. You know, maybe they can offer us some help, just be creative. So I'd love to see a public space like that within our office space, you know, half FP, half teaching, giving them a creative space to be creative in. That's where I'd like to see us to be. And I'd love, my ultimate dream right now is to just spend 1 year on the con circuit, whether I'm behind the booth or in front of the booth, just to be out there for a year. Because the years of experience that I have being on the con circuit has always been patchy here, there. And I've learned so much from being on there that I can apply toward the company, but I'd love to be up there for a year, solid. Just not just for the travel time, but just to get our name out there, to promote more, to network more, and to just expose people to, it doesn't even necessarily be ZKS, any books that we put out, because I stand behind every product that we put out. I think just to expose other people to the artists and phenomenal stuff that we have back here, I'd love to spend a year doing that. If I could spend 5 years doing that, bird. Eventually I'd have to come home and my wife might not be too happy about that.
She might not be too happy about you coming home?
Either or. She's like a writer. The first couple of weeks of me being gone, she really misses me. The second couple of weeks, she's like, oh, I'll be home soon. The third couple of weeks, she's like, that motherfucker better be back soon. I'm going to whip his ass.
So, seeing as you write so quickly, like, do you really have a writer's process, or do you pretty much have things mapped out in your head to begin with?
It depends on the story. Sometimes I used to carry around a voice recorder with me, and a sentence would pop in my head. And from that sentence, a world would be created, you know. And so I'd record that sentence real quick. And a lot of my stories have come from just those sentences. ZKS came from, well, what would happen if they knew how to, that they were zombies from the beginning? You know, and everything just blew up from there. So there's no real writing process. Optimally, the best place, an opportunity for me to write is, you know, at the 12-hour days, I can pop on my headphones, I can zone out the world, I'm being surrounded by creative people, so they inspire me to be more creative, and boom, I can kick out a story right away, depending on the song, honestly. Like, if I'm writing, and I'm listening to, like, Five Finger Death Punch, and I'm just like, oh, action, action, and then The Cure comes on, I'm like, oh, we're all dead. It's the Suicide Squad. And then, you know, something hip-hop-y, Run-DMC will pop on, and I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, it's depends on the music. That's why I don't listen to country.
God, those would be some sad stories.
Right. And a lot of horses.
I don't want to hear. That just sounds wrong.
Yeah, it's supposed to.
Well, it's about time for us to take a break. We'll be right back with AJ.
Hello, everyone. This is Anthony White of the Panelcast, asking you to check out my bi-monthly column, Messages from the Ether, on the Forbidden Panel website. It's a column about my adventures at conventions, as well as my experiences playing new and old video games and experiencing new anime. That's Messages from the Ether, only on ForbiddenPanel.com.
And we're back here in Honest Bartlett with AJ Hura. AJ,
say hello again.
Hello again.
All right. So, where we left off, recently you started with the whole inking process. Was that through more necessity or something that you just wanted to try out?
It started off as necessity because work was getting stockpiled and, you know, we do the 24-hour days and the pencils were done and then we'd have to wait about a month or so before the inks were done. So I decided to try to learn it so I can help speed up the process. And, because, again, nobody cares about the writer in comic books, so I wanted to try and take on some sort of artistic role as well. Just as apparently I wasn't doing enough in the company and I needed more stuff to do.
All right, you can never have enough on your shoulders.
Right, right, you know. That's why I'm fat, because I carry so much shit on my shoulders.
So, and I've noticed, like, I actually knew the answer to that, but it has seemed like it's become a passion for you also now. I see you looking at other art and looking how you'd like to ink it, or even taking on stuff and doing it in your own style and comparing it to other, how it's inked or whatever. So has it become a point of passion now for you?
A little bit. You know, I started off by doing the sessions issue of ZKS. And that was my first one, and admittedly, it didn't come out as great as I had hoped. So, you know, and through conversations with you and Justin and everybody else, I picked up a few tricks here and there. And it got to a point where I just wanted to prove that I can do it to myself, just to show it. Or maybe I was just feeling lonely and wanted somebody to give me a compliment on something. I don't know. But in doing the first issue of Owl and the Steam Knots, at first it was kind of annoying because, you know, I'm sitting at the table for 8 hours a day inking the stuff, and I kept having random people's voices and commentary in my head critiquing what I was doing. And then eventually it got to where I was really enjoying it. And like I now see pencils and see how I would ink it, you know. And I'm always a big fan of learning things. I've always been, anything I can do to improve who I am, skill set wise, I'm always a fan of. So I started doing more inking and randomly, like you said, other people's projects, people that don't even have anything to do with us. You know, if I see their pencils online, I'll swoop them up just so I can learn new tricks. You know, I knew how to do this and how to do that. So like a couple of the prints I've sent you, you know, they look great, but man, it took me like 10 seconds to do, because I've learned new tricks and how to do this stuff and cut down on time. So, but yeah, as I got further on into doing Owl and the Steam Knots, those 8-hour days became fun. They became a joy for me because I would see, you know, it's like mowing a very shaggy lawn. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, it's trim and neat and proper, and it feeds my OCD. You know, and it's something I can look and be like, yeah, I did that. And you know, especially when comparison pictures, I'll look at the pencils and look at the inks and see how much more depth that's come of it. You know, and inking for Wisdom Heaven, he's a phenomenal artist, and the way he looks at things is like a puzzle. So when I get them and I see this penciled outline and I don't understand it, but as I'm inking it, I see the pieces of the puzzle start to come together and the picture comes together, and I'm like, oh man, this is awesome, this is turning awesome, you know, with the Her Beauty Your Brain shirt that I did with Cricket on the front. When I got it, it just looked like these random lines, and by the time I was done, yeah, it was like Rubik's Cube, you're getting all the colors together, and it was just, it's awesome, and it became fun for me. So yeah, now it's a passion project.
So do you find difficulty in different styles, like from someone like Justin, who has I'd say Justin's is kind of a simplified style, to someone like Joey's is a little bit more complex and depth. Like, do you find any frustrations, or just take it as it goes?
I think it mostly comes from, with inking Justin's work, he draws with the opinion that he's going to ink. So he doesn't draw complete, you know what I mean? Because he knows where he wants those lines to go. He knows where those shading comes. So yeah, when it comes to me inking behind him, I have no fucking clue what he was thinking of when he drew it. So it's a little frustrating. And so when I'm done inking his pages, I look at it like, that can't be what he thought of. You know, that can't be what he was seeing. So I get upset at him and upset at myself. I haven't had an opportunity. Oh, yeah, I've... Joey has actually given me stuff to ink because he wants to see what I comes up with, what looks like when I'm done with it. To the point of where now he's taken, like I took one of his pictures off of Facebook and photoshopped it to where it's an adequate pixelated size and whatnot, and then inked it randomly and then sent it back to him. And that took me 15 minutes to do, and it's now a print that we're selling at Kamikaze. So. He's now given me other projects like, hey, take this, and they become fun. His Jurassic Park one was awesome. And it was awesome before I started inking it. And then when I was done inking it, I was like, holy shit, that's great. I did that? You know? But now I see like, oh no, I forgot this, and I want to go back and re-ink it properly. So yeah, every person inking after every person is different depending on the artist. If they draw it knowing somebody else is going to ink it, I think it's better. But if they draw it, you know, Justin has learned that since then and now draws in that manner, which is evident in his new book, The Age of Devouring. It's heavy on the inks, but he's got it marked out and everything. It's a color by numbers at that point. And so I have fun seeing that stuff come to life and inking it. But if they don't draw it for inking, you know, for somebody else to ink, then yeah, it's complete frustration. because unlike an artist that can link up with what I'm trying to portray in my writing, it's hard for me to match up with what they're trying to draw because I don't draw. So, yeah, having to fill in those empty lines.
Have you found that to be a detriment, the lack of ability to draw, like missing lines or...
At first I did, but now I've learned tricks.
Tricks are amazing, aren't they?
Right, so I have a tattooed on my arm.
Tricks are for kids.
Shh, we'll go to jail. Now that I've learned like some tricks is going forward and stuff, and people have helped me out, I wouldn't say it's too much of a detriment. It still prohibits my forward vision, though. You know, I still can't see what their idea is. And in that aspect, it has hindered me. But missing lines and whatnot, I can now trick my way into filling it out, copy and pasting and all that stuff.
Have you had any artists that would like to see you ink their stuff, like to see what your vision of their vision looks like?
Other than Joey? You, but I think you just want to torture me.
Yes, I can't wait for you to get your hands on Christopher Walken.
The picture.
Whatever.
Not the man himself.
A little bit of both.
Honestly, no, not really. I don't think anybody's come up to, but at the same time, I haven't really offered it. I'd love, if Owen ever started drawing again, I'd love to get a hold of this stuff and start inking that, especially his logo designs and stuff. I'd love to come behind him and do inking on that. And I've tried to draw something, and it just, I just stick to inking. But yeah, I'm starting to love it a lot more. And I'm also starting to get recognized for it, too. Like, setting it off and getting compliments on it and stuff. Like, so, I guess I'm doing the right thing.
Oh, that just means that you're becoming multifaceted and you actually have a reason behind the booth?
Well, I just want to be more involved in the comic process, you know? Like I said, as a writer, even as the editor and every hat that I wear in the company, it still feels out of my hands once I send it off to an artist, you know? The only time I get to see it afterwards is to critique it, to ask them to fix this and fix that, or, 3 years later when I finally get the finished product and send it off to print, you know? But, you know, and at first I was just doing the interior covers of lettering and stuff, you know, but now that I've more incorporated into it, it's a lot better. I'd love to go back and redo some of the stuff I've already inked and do it properly. I'd love to re-ink Aloe and Steam Knots. But I've already got that book to work on the next one, so.
So in a way, it's pretty similar to the way artists are, because I know I have many like pictures that I've drawn that I would love to just redo now because I've learned so many different styles and stuff like that. So it's pretty similar in that aspect.
Right, but I haven't had anybody tell me, no, it looks great the way it is. Stop fucking with it, as I do with other people, with other artists. Like, it looks good. Why are you throwing that in the trash? It's phenomenal. I haven't heard that yet.
I throw art away all the time. All
right, and I want to shoot you for it.
I think the thing about inking is you can get so many different views of the exact same picture, and to me, my art is never complete. So maybe you might be one of those people that's going to view your inking that way. Like, you could always change it, you could always shade it differently because it's going to look different from a different point of view.
Well, I've done over other people's inks. Camille Capicera, I've sent you some of his work. It's phenomenal work. I can't remember who the other artist was, but they've already inked it, and then I look at it, and it's just like a story. You know, just like I'd said before, you know, I'll watch these TV shows or I'll watch these movies, and I'm thinking to myself, this is how I would do it differently, and I think it would make more sense. That's how ZKS got started. Like, why don't they know it's a zombie already? So I see other people's inking, and I'm like, and I'll see things like, oh, you know what, this would look good like this, and this would look good like this. And so I'll take their already inked stuff and just add to it. And I think it brings it a little bit more to life for me, in my point of view. But, it, you know, on the off days, when I don't have anything to ink, I practice. I go on T-shirt sites and stuff, and I find T-shirt designs that I like and whatnot, and I download them, and I try to change them or alter them in a way that I'd like them or use as a background on my computer. And so that way I'm still Photoshopping at least one thing a day, but learning different things while I'm at it, you know? There's more to it than just clicking F and left click and fill.
Have you tried adding color to anything? Or
yeah. I've done a few things like that. because of my own issues with colors and whatnot, I'll try to bring things that are like faded and make them brighter. Or there's this one image that I had. It was it's on a red background and it's Batman, but it's bats that make him out, and all the bats are black. And I've changed the color to where the bats were yellow and the background was black, because yellow on black is, you know, his cow color, and I thought it'd make it pop more, and, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I've changed colors. I've changed. I've even added things. You know, there's this one T-shirt where it's Harley Quinn, but she's Tank Girl style, as Joker, and he's Tank Girl style. And what I did was I took both of those images, put them together, tweaked them up, added some lines, and made them into one T-shirt, one design. You know, so yeah. But again, it's just for me to learn.
Right, just practice. You
know, right. And I wish I could do that with my writing.
So, we are kind of winding down on this. Is there anything amongst the many hats that you wear? Actually, what exactly are all your titles in FP? I'm curious to know this.
Okay, so let's see. Founder, owner, CEO, editor-in-chief, podcaster, reviewer, news writer, inker, publisher, promoter, producer. I write sometimes.
You direct sometimes?
I direct sometimes. I do booth setup, booth management. I'm basically shipping and receiving.
Event coordinator?
Event coordinator. Secretary, talent organizer, driver, chauffeur. Case in point, this Saturday I've got to drive an artist to Kamikaze.
I'm just too lazy to drive.
Yeah, many, many different hats.
So amongst all of those hats, is there anything that you haven't embarked on as part of the company you'd like to?
Yes, retiree.
You just want to sit on a throne and watch your money pile?
I don't even want to sit. I just want to fucking lay in bed and go to sleep and get a phone call. Hey, is it okay to do this? Yeah, fuck you. Why are you calling me? Call Jen. Honestly, no. No. I wear all the hats with pride. You know, it shows me that, I mean, 12 years ago, I was sleeping on a fucking park bench, you know, begging for change, asking for money, you know, all that shit. Now, you know, I'm running this company, still begging for money, married, happy, connected with my family, and moving forward with my life. So if having to wear all those hats is what gets me here today, then pile them on, because they just make me taller. That was way too deep.
That was very deep, which actually leads into my next question is, FP is
how deep is the rabbit hole?
Right, exactly. How deep is the rabbit hole? So Forbidden Panel for all of us, it seems.
Did you say it in Spanish? Forbidden Panel.
Yes, that too. It's been a long day. So it's more of a family to all of us. Not just a group of friends, it's groups of friends, meeting groups of friends. But you're basically the cause of this huge family.
Don't put that shit on me.
It's all on you. How do you feel about that?
It ain't my fault. I didn't do nothing.
You've put all these degenerates together.
I'm the Pied fucking Piper. I don't know. That's the question I don't know how to answer, honestly. I think it's an excuse, like I'm just trying to get friends. I just want to have friends, people that call me and talk to me and want to conversate with me and hang out with me. I blame it on the Army. You know, when I was in the Army, smallest guy there was, at the time I was 135, and I was busting my ass to keep up with these big boys. But I knew whatever happened, wherever I went, I had 30 motherfuckers that had my back. And since I got out of the Army, I'd always been looking for a group of friends or people that do that in any endeavor. And I'm the first guy. I don't care. When I was sleeping on the streets, I still gave people a shirt off my back and helped, gave them money to eat, whatever I can do. And that's just how I am. That's how I envue a family to be. So having Forbidden Panel is in that same vein. You know, look at Anthony. Case in point, you know, when we first met Anthony, he was, you know, kind of an outsider, still doesn't talk to anybody much. And I brought him in, and he reports on the podcast with me. He travels out to New York Comic Con to meet people and do reports on that stuff. He goes to conventions with us, and he puts himself out there on a daily basis. And I know when it came down to it, that motherfucker's got my back, and I've got his. And it's the same with everybody in here. You know, I see people that I don't want to say are straining or alone or anything like that, but just need a little guidance, a little direction, and need somebody to get their back. And that's what I want. I want them to come in and know that they now have somebody that's got their back one way or another. You know, it's the same like, you know, you and I, how we roll. You know, sometimes I can get lunch, sometimes you get lunch, sometimes you can't make your deadline on art, cool, I extend it, I pass it off to somebody else. Sometimes I just can't function as being in charge, so I hand off the reins to you. We've all got each other's backs, and that's one of the things that I've always been happy with, you know, that I have a family here, and everybody that comes in has a family, and they all feel the same way. Just come to the Christmas parties, and you'll see, you know. Go to the beauty pageant, see all that work, and everybody busting their ass because I asked them to. And me doing the same for them. You know, I'm busting my ass because people need to be exposed to them. People need to see who they are. You know, why would I put on a zombie beauty pageant and ask girls to get up there and show themselves, expose themselves that way if I didn't think that they had something to show? You know, you get girls that cannot compete or just don't have it in them to compete in a regular beauty pageant, but will go up on stage in a bikini, ugly and destroyed as hell, bloody and beaten and working their ass off, ended up on that stage smiling and laughing and crying, having such a great time. You know, that's an opportunity that I know I gave them. And I know if I needed to, if it came down to it, they would help me out with that as well. So that's how we are.
So
get me all crying and shit on the fucking video.
That's my point. So, in closing, what would you like to say to your fans?
I have fans.
You have plenty of fans.
Turn on. It's hot. Cool me down. what I would like to see, if there are indeed fans and stuff out there, is commentary. You know, we do put ourselves out there, expose ourselves out there for everybody to judge and look at and do what they will. I give you my heart. In my soul, comment, let me know what you think of it, you know, shoot me an email, tell me what you liked about the book, what you didn't like about the book. When we do a podcast or post news stories or whatnot, comment on it, let us know what you're thinking about. I know you guys are out there, we get 250,000 hits a month, you know, and I'd just like to hear from you, you know, let me know that you're out there, let me know what you want to see next, you know, how can we help you, what can we do to get you out to the shows, what can we do to make you want to buy our books and participate, you know, help us increase the family.
So upcoming, where will Forbidden Panel be?
Wherever there's air conditioner, that's where we'll be. If there's exposed sunlight, we won't be there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this podcast will be out in time for it, but we have Kamikaze coming up this Halloween weekend. It's our first time there, so I'm very excited about that. We have WonderCon coming up this year, and normally WonderCon is our, as you put it, is our home. So I'm looking forward to that. We're going to have that coming up. We have a double-sized space, so a lot more stuff to put out there. A lot more of us, our souls on display. Other than that, you can probably find us floating around at any of the different convention centers out there, being fans ourselves, because, you know, we started off as geeks. So this year has been, while we haven't had a lot of shows to display at, we've gone to WonderCon, Phoenix, Celebration, New York Comic Con, all these shows that we've been to. So one way or another, we're out there. If you don't see the Forbidden Panel banner, you'll still see some of our artists out there with a stamp on their work.
All right, and in closing, throw out all the social media.
Shit. Just type in Forbidden Panel, bitch. You can find us anywhere, man. Find us on Instagram, Tumblr, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Vine. We're going to have a Snapchat going here soon. Did I say Tumblr already?
Yeah, I think so. Do we have a Periscope?
Periscope, we have a Periscope. We might start doing some of that during our 12-hour days. And yeah, you know, the website, and I guess Facebook might be worth mentioning. That's where we're mainly at. And you know what, if I could, one last thing, man. We do these 12 and 24-hour Create Something days here. A lot of people seem to think that it's only you have to be a member of the company or only work on conflicts to come out there. It's not the case. This is our opportunity. We give you a space for 12 to 24 hours to create anything. I've been known to like cook and test subject everybody here on my meals. Nobody has died yet.
But you'll admit to.
Right, on record. We've had people come out here and rehearse music, you know, play their instruments and put songs together out here. It's not just for comic books. It's an entire environment designed around creating something. So, you know, please come on out. Don't be ashamed. Don't be shy. Don't be scared.
And it is family friendly.
It is family friendly until about 8 o'clock at night. And then we start putting on the good movies.
We did watch It Follows.
Yeah, I didn't say great movies. But I mean, yeah, we set up an environment where you can create and do stuff, and we help each other out. There's so much I've learned personally from the 12-hour days, just sitting here inking in front of the computer and having you guys come over and, well, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? And there's so much everybody else has learned, you know. Daniel has evolved leaps and bounds thanks to the 12 and 24-hour days because we've been here helping him out and helping him do stuff and learn. You, yourself, I've seen you learn different tips and techniques. I've even seen you come in with a different carrying case for your stuff. But yeah, we do this again. I mean, yes, it is an excuse for us to work, but it's also an excuse for you guys. It's an excuse for us to meet you guys and get in touch with our fans one-on-one and help create the creative process. I love watching people learn. You know, and I love being a part of that process, and you will learn at these things, and you'll finish a project, one way or another. And you also get used to me hovering over your shoulder, yelling at you.
It is a great creative environment, and it's good to have other creative people around there, just feeding off the creative energy. It's amazing. So
big siphon. And we watch movies throughout the whole thing. We watch the Star Wars movies, the last one. We watch really bad horror movies. We made the mistake of watching every single Lord of the Rings movie uncut. That took up the entire 12 hours in itself. Probably watched the Hobbit extended edition. Actually, the next one we're doing is the Educate Daniel 12-hour day. We'll be showing movies that anybody should have seen by now, but he hasn't.
Like The Crow?
The Crow, Wicked City, not Wicked City, sorry, Dark City. Conan, you know, things like that we believe every geek should have seen in their life.
Wow.
So, you know, come on out and join us. It'll be fun. And, you know, Richard orders pizza.
I do that. All right, well, in closing, thank you very much. This has been Artist Spotlight with AJ Herrera. I am me.
Still.
Until the end. Thank you all for listening, and follow us on every amount of social media you could ever think of. We're there. Just Google Forbidden Panel. You'll find us. Thanks.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.